I'm Dr. Bruce Wilson, and I'm a cardiologist in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. I'm the medical director for HeartMath, and I wanted to take the opportunity today to talk to you a little bit about the HeartMath story, how I came to HeartMath, and some of the programs we've started and some of the people that we've been able to use the HeartMath tools with. I started out looking in 1997 for a method that was documentable and reproducible and scientifically validated to reduce stress in my cardiac patients. Everybody has always known that stress is bad for the heart, and the medical literature has been replete with articles describing worse outcomes in patients who have known heart disease and continue to have stress. So over the years, cardiac rehab programs have all tried to build in a stress component to teach people how to handle their stress, because we know that people have improved outcomes and live longer, and we also have some information about spending fewer healthcare dollars in that regard. So stress has always been something that's been very important, but the problem with stress is that we haven't been able to measure it. And if we haven't been able to measure it, then it's hard to document what we're doing when we teach someone how to reduce their stress. Now, over the years, we've had many different methods of reducing stress. Meditation has been around for thousands of years. Prayer has certainly been around for thousands of years. Exercise has been helpful. Vacation is helpful. Tai Chi and yoga and some of the more ancient techniques have all been very helpful to people over the years. The problem with us is we live so fast, and we live in a culture that is moving so quickly that we need tools to break stress in the moment. Also, many of the patients tell us that it's hard learning these tools, and it takes a long time to get good at them. So in 1997, I was actually handed an article that was from Natural Health Magazine that talked about the Institute of HeartMath and the research they were doing on stress and its effect on health and human performance. I read this article with great interest, first thinking that it was going to be some sort of voodoo. After I read a few paragraphs, I was able to see that the research team at HeartMath had uncovered some very basic things that I'd like to talk to you a little bit about before we go into how this has been helpful for our patients. The science behind HeartMath is extremely interesting to me as a cardiologist. There are a couple of basic findings that were discovered, and fascinating to me because as a cardiologist, I've been using the EKG machine for a very long time, and historically you may know that the EKG machine was invented and developed in about 1903. That was done by a guy by the name of Eindhoven in Europe. So we've had this machine for over 100 years now. I find it interesting that we weren't really paying attention, but let me give you the first of the scientific facts, and that is that the amplitude of the ECG signal, the electromagnetic waveform that we have all thought all along has just been causing your heart to contract in synchrony, that ECG electromagnetic wave is about 50 times as powerful, or has about 50 times the electrical amplitude of the EEG, or the brain waves. Now, that's a very interesting thing to observe. All of us have been taught in one way or another, or in one school or another, that the brain is in charge of everything. But it's an interesting concept to find out that the electrical signal that we thought was just causing the heart to contract in the right sequence is actually 50 or 60 times as powerful as your brain waves. That sort of turns our paradigm upside down. The next important observation was that there's more traffic running along the nerves from the heart up to the brain than the other way around. So in neurological terms, what we say is there is more afferent traffic going heart to brain than efferent traffic going brain to heart. That's another rather astounding fact if we hold true to the paradigm that the brain is in charge of everything. Why would we have more information coming into the brain than going out of it? Then a heart surgeon by the name of Dr. Drew Armour, who's at the University of Montreal, started doing research on hearts and found, very interestingly, the presence of neurons or brain cells right in the heart. He started with animals, and then he started using autopsy specimens of humans and Dr. Armour found that there are about 40,000 neurons in the human heart. This, too, was very surprising to me as a cardiologist. I've been studying the heart for about 30 years, and no one had ever told me anything about neurons being in the heart, and these are quite separate from the conduction system of the heart. But let's just stop and think a little bit. The last three things I've told you are that there are brain cells in the heart, there's more traffic going from the heart up to the brain than the other way around, and that the heart signal is actually 50 or 60 times as powerful as the brain signal. So I think that would cause us to stop for a second and try to re-examine our paradigm that the brain's in charge of everything. We don't have any answers from those three basic pieces of information, but we certainly would have a lot of questions. In fact, using a technology called heart rate variability, which has been around for a long time, and as a matter of fact is the technology that is inside the fetal monitor machine when a woman has a baby, when she goes into labor and they strap the belt on her, we're watching the baby's heartbeat. And it's not so much the rate of the baby's heartbeat, but the pattern of change in the baby's heart rate. So heart rate variability does exactly what it says it does. It measures the variability of the heart rate. Well, it turns out that the heart rate variability signal coming out of the heart, which once again is probably 50 or 60 times as powerful as the signal coming out of the brain, can only be seen in two patterns. In other words, I like to use the phrase, the heart can only sing two songs. And again, we're talking specifically about the use of heart rate variability to look into this heart-brain connection. But when we use heart rate variability, we see that the heart is only able to sing two songs. And the phrase I use is, it's singing one song or the other song onto your hard drive or your brain. Now, what does all of this mean? Well, one of the patterns that we see the heart singing, if you will, is the pattern that is seen when the stress response has been activated. It's a very herky-jerky pattern. And the other pattern is a very orderly and regular pattern. And when we see that orderly and regular pattern playing, we notice, first of all, that that pattern is playing during stage 4 sleep, the most relaxed and restorative stage of sleep. But the most interesting thing to us has been the fact that the heart rate variability signal is very orderly. It looks like a sine wave when we are in the zone, so to speak. So when we're in a positive mood and we are very relaxed and clear and focused and what people say is a very efficient mode, we see this same pattern. Now the question becomes, what happens physiologically when the heart rate variability pattern is the stress pattern or this other more orderly pattern? Now, I had heard about heart rate variability, and it was a tool that was used in cardiovascular research. My background is in academic cardiology. I ran the cardiac care unit at the University of Minnesota for about 3 or 4 years, and then I was the director of the University of Pittsburgh Heart Institute at the University of Pittsburgh for a couple of years, and I was fascinated by this application of this technology, which has been around cardiology a bit too, but we didn't really know what to make of it. So again, using heart rate variability, we can see two separate patterns. It turns out that when the stress pattern is playing, and in fact that stress pattern is playing almost all of the time we're awake, if I put a monitor on any of you, we would see that this stress pattern is playing all the time, basically, when we're awake. That actually has a lot to do with how our body responds. It has to do with our immunity. It has to do with the production of stress hormones like cortisol. And most importantly, it has to do with how our brain is functioning. You and I were probably taught along the way that the information going from the heart to the brain is pretty much isolated in the area of the brain called the hind brain or the brain stem, where reflexes that control our survival are located. So we were taught that the heart sends information up a nerve and it goes to the back part of the brain, and the brain responds by increasing or decreasing blood pressure or our respiratory rate or our heart rate. In fact, very important research being done at the Institute of HeartMath and many other laboratories around the world now have demonstrated that this heart signal, being 50 times as powerful as the brain, goes north to the brain and interacts not only with our survival centers, but also with our midbrain structures, which we call the limbic system, which is deeply involved in emotion and memory. And most importantly, these heart signals are reaching the cortex and affecting cortical function. The cortex, of course, is where we do our higher order processing, where we are human beings and not raccoons. We communicate, we integrate information, we learn foreign languages and mathematics, we run companies, we take care of patients, we're parents. We can take information we've seen before and make some prediction about the future. That big part of the brain known as the cerebral cortex, which is 80% of the human brain, is actually profoundly affected by this heart signal. And when we look at the heart rate variability signal, we can see something really important. That is that when the heart rate variability signal is singing the stress song, if you will, it actually inhibits cortical function. Now let me say that again because it's a very important concept. The heart rate variability signal can be seen traveling north to the brain, and when this signal is the stress signal, which again we carry around most of the time when we're awake, it inhibits cortical function. That might be a great explanation for why we always do stupid things when we're very stressed out or afraid or something startles us. In fact, our stress response, of course, was wired into us 200,000 years ago when there were saber-toothed tigers running around chasing us. And if your stress button has been pushed then, it's very important to get out of there before the tiger eats you. In fact, cortical inhibition from this stress signal, making us stupid at the moment, is okay because the main feature of the stress response is get out of there before you become lunch. So we pour adrenaline into the system and run faster and jump higher, hopefully get out of that jungle. And we then pour cortisol into the system, which raises our blood sugar, raises our blood pressure, and that helps us in case we're wounded in the process. But we really don't have to be doing our physics homework while we are running from a tiger. So the stress signal has very important survival characteristics built into it, and the cascade of biochemical events we now know to be about 1,400 reactions long. All of that's very good if there's a tiger chasing you, but not very helpful if the stress button has been pushed for a heated discussion with a business associate or a traffic jam or being late for a meeting or having a run-in with your teenage son or daughter. All of the things that are tripping our stress response right now have nothing at all to do with our physical survival, but it's causing stress to play on the hard drive all the time. And in fact, this survival mechanism, by raising adrenaline and raising cortisol and many other hormones in the system, this survival mechanism is actually killing us now. Because the prolonged exposure to cortisol and adrenaline, which raises blood pressure and blood sugar, gives us diseases like hypertension, obesity, diabetes, and eventually heart disease, the number one killer in most countries on this earth, and has a lot to do with other chronic diseases too. So stress is an integral component of most serious diseases, and the problem has been that we haven't been able to attack it because we haven't understood it. But now we do understand it. We also see that stress is an important component in our brain function. And while the stress signal goes up to the brain and gives us cortical inhibition, which is why we trip all over ourselves and create more of a mess when we are stressed, after all, when we respond out of stress, we create more stress most of the time, don't we? The good news on that story is that when the heart signal is very orderly, what we call coherent, which is a physics term meaning orderliness within a pattern or synchronization between systems. When the pattern is coherent, like when we're in the zone, we get something called cortical facilitation. In other words, our cortex, the smart part of the brain, the executive part of the brain, functions at a much higher level. Our perspective is broadened. Our perceptions are changed by adding more information. Our reaction times are quicker. Our creativity is enhanced. If I ask you, when do you get your most enlightened moments where you think of solutions for your life's problems? Most people will say, I get that in the shower. Or I get that when I'm just about to fall asleep. Or I get that when I'm exercising, riding my bike, or taking a walk. Those enlightenment moments, the aha moments of our lives where we figure out what to do, don't come when there's a gun to our head. They come when we're relaxed and unstressed. So all of this would be leading you to say, sure, that's very interesting, but tell us the answer here. How do we use this information? Well, the Institute of Heart Math and the research laboratory there, when they saw the heart rate variability patterns being so distinctly different and that there were only two of them, and when they started measuring the positive effects of having coherence in the heart rate variability signal, meaning orderliness, that regular pattern that we see when we're either deeply asleep or in the zone, they just worked with multiple variables from many different techniques until they were able to throw the switch from the very chaotic stress to the very orderly, coherent pattern. So HeartMath is all about throwing the switch in the moment. Now, why is that important? Well, I mentioned earlier on that we have had many techniques over the millennia to help us reduce stress and develop ways of getting balance back into our lives when we work too hard or are under too much prolonged stress. We certainly understand the health consequences of being under this stress now. The problem is that all of the methods that we've used to date have required us to wait until later. So you go on vacation in April, or you go to church on Sunday, or synagogue on Saturday, or you meditate later tonight, or you work out on Thursday. You get the idea? So whatever we do to help, and some things we do to help don't help at all, like overeat or drink too much or take drugs. But whatever we do to help ourselves, it's always later. So we continue to bathe in this cortisol bath that we certainly were never built to bathe in. We're supposed to get a squirt every once in a while when we see a tiger. But in fact, we're bathing in this cortisol, and it's giving us all of the chronic diseases that are killing us now. And by the way, making us stupid, as I mentioned before. So how do we throw the switch right now if it's not a tiger biting us right now and our physical survival is not in question? Then we really don't want that stress physiology playing into our system because it's killing us and making us stupid. So the tools of HeartMath were developed in the laboratory in order to throw that switch from the chaotic pattern to the coherent pattern. These tools have been very carefully studied. They are very easy to teach. They are very easy to learn, and we have a very wide experience that I'll talk to you about in just a minute, in which we've been able to teach five-year-old children and corporate executives and everybody in between. We can each actually teach doctors this. It's amazing. But we have a wide spectrum of people who can learn these tools in just a matter of minutes. And HeartMath has developed seminars for people to learn these tools. The seminars have been called various things like the power to change performance or transforming stress or you name it, but we have been able to take these tools and embed them in a learning program that people can learn very quickly and use these tools in their personal lives and professional lives, and we'll talk about some of those applications. Let me tell you that when I first went to HeartMath in 1997 and saw what they were doing, I was very impressed. I spent some time in the laboratory with Dr. McCready, who is the research director at HeartMath. And I came back to my own hospital where I was a full-time interventional cardiologist, and I said, we've got to bring this into regular healthcare. The science is very basic, it's very elegant, and this should be taught to cardiac patients, but it should be taught to all sorts of patients. This should be taught to nurses, who are very stressed out. The turnover rate in most hospitals across the country averages about 28% per year for nurses, and that's a very expensive prospect for the administration to continue to hire nurses and lose them. I was giving a talk at the National Cardiovascular Rehab Conference in Denver in 1998 on the science behind heart math, and a nurse who worked at a hospital called Delnor Hospital just outside of Chicago ran to the podium and said, "I want to do that thing. I want to do this heart math program in my hospital." And the healthcare division of heart math was really born out of the Delnor Hospital's request to have a formal program to train their nurses and train their patients and put in a program to reduce stress at the hospital. Delnor's turnover rate for nurses was exactly the national average. It was about 28%. And Delnor undertook a very aggressive program to train about 1,000 of their staff in the first couple of years. In the early going, the turnover rate dropped from 28% down to about 4%. And Delnor Hospital calculated that they saved $880,000 in their first year from nursing turnover rates alone. Now, I should mention here that when we got into this business, we were making some pretty blunt and rough calculations on what it might cost to lose a nurse. And in fact, today, now that we've been studying this for the last 8 or 9 years, we know that it costs somewhere between $60,000 or $65,000 and maybe $75,000 to lose a nurse when you look quite closely at it. So when Delnor Hospital calculated they saved $880,000 that first year on nursing turnover charges costs, that was actually done with the calculation of $22,000 per nurse. Their estimate was $22,000 to lose a nurse, and we know now it's about $65,000 or $70,000 to lose a nurse. So in fact, they probably saved $3 or $4 million, not $800,000. We got a little smarter along the way because we have put programs in at multiple hospitals around the country, and we have found over and over again that the nursing turnover rate drops quite dramatically. Again, the average in the country is about 28% per year. And we've been able to drop that rate down to the 3, 4, 5, 6% range. And these people are saving $3 or $4 million a year every year, as well as changing the so-called corporate climate, even though this is healthcare. They change the climate in which they operate. Now, I'd like to say a word about that because I grew up in the nursing arena. I was a nurse's aide while I was waiting to go to medical school, and I've been working in hospitals ever since, and what I can tell you is that the hospital environment has become progressively more stressful, and I can also tell you that nurses are called to what they do. No nurse ever thought that she or he was ever going to be famous or ever going to make $1 million or ever have a great schedule. So when a nurse goes into nursing, he or she goes in because they want to help patients get well. They want to give something of themselves. Nurses quit because they get disconnected from the reason they came into nursing. In other words, they would love to care for patients, but the hierarchy and bureaucracy of the current general hospital is such that they feel like too many things are in between them and their patients. And what HeartMath has done, we have found over and over and over again, is reconnect these nurses to their hearts. It reconnects nurses to the reason they came into nursing in the first place. And when they can manage the stresses of their job and get back to being connected to why they came in the first place and deliver real care from the heart, they love their jobs again and they don't quit. And that's the bottom line. So the healthcare division, which has been operating since about 1999, has had some wonderful results. And I thought I would just go into that, but I'd like to mention, too, some of the other pilot studies we've done at HeartMath over the last 10 years or so on different types of patients so you can get an idea about the wide applicability of the HeartMath tools. First of all, let me tell you that a biofeedback tool called the Freeze Framer, which is a program that you download onto your computer off of a disk, and there's hardware attached to the computer that goes in your USB drive that comes out. It is a, we can use a finger sensor or an ear sensor to pick up your pulse, and if we can pick up your pulse, we can calculate your heart rate variability signal quite easily. This computer program, which loads onto your PC, is able to display your heart rate variability patterns quite easily, and there are multiple games and applications and methods of display and storage methods so you can see your progress as you learn to convert your heart rate variability signal from chaos to coherence. This has been a very, very effective tool in teaching and motivating people to practice. The Freeze Framer and now the handheld device we have developed called the M-Wave, which is about the size of an iPod and fits in your pocket and has some limited displays, but it's very portable and lightweight, and it's very high-tech. Everybody loves this thing. Have been used to help people to be motivated about this. But I need to tell you, we can teach the HeartMath tools to anybody at any time without any technology. It's just much more reinforcing for people to see that they've actually done it. It seems too easy when you learn this. But the fact of the matter is, and you must remember this because it's key, the heart signal, once again, is 50 times as powerful as the brain signal. And that just affords us the opportunity to use the heart as the access point into the heart-brain connection and the autonomic nervous system to shift the stress response to a zone response, if you will. We have studies on patients with diabetes lowering their blood sugar and their hemoglobin A1C by practicing the HeartMath tools. We have studies in asthma, which has a strong autonomic component, as you know. We have studies with people who are depressed, patients suffering from PTSD, patients with anxiety disorder, and multiple other conditions that have autonomic components to them. We look forward to a number of research studies which are underway right now, which number about a dozen, with major medical centers around the country, dealing with things like pain in patients in a burn unit, or cardiac rhythm disturbances, etc. We do have a lot of information on hypertension, and as a matter of fact, I just authored a book along with Doc Childre, the founder of HeartMath, called The HeartMath Approach to Hypertension, which talks about using these very simple tools in order to lower pressure. We have a nice study that showed that in patients using the HeartMath tools versus patients in the control group who were just educated about hypertension, the patients using the HeartMath tools enjoyed a 10.3 millimeter systolic pressure drop on average. And the control group had a smaller drop, but there was a small drop in the control group because we were paying attention to them. There was a 6.3 millimeter drop or 6.5 millimeter drop in diastolic pressure as well. Now, you may or may not know that if someone wants to take a new antihypertensive drug through the FDA, we have to promise them that we can lower your blood pressure by 4 points, systolic. And we lowered the blood pressure on average by a little over 10 points. So this is a wonderful, wonderful set of tools. And just like a patient who sees me for hypertension, I can say to that patient, here's a beta blocker or a calcium blocker or an ACE inhibitor or a diuretic or you name it. Here's a drug that should lower your blood pressure. After all, I went to blood pressure school. I am supposed to know these things. And in fact, most of the time when we give somebody one of those drugs, it does in fact lower their blood pressure. But in plenty of cases, it does not lower the blood pressure. And in some cases, we give people side effects. So using the HeartMath tools, which lower your stress in your everyday life with your family at home, at the grocery store, watching the soccer game, whatever, as well as your professional life or whatever you do for a living, these tools constantly and repeatedly used with success to convert that stress response when it's not appropriate to the situation. After all, you've got to have that stress response because if a drunk driver is crossing the median and heading right for your car, it would be good to have a big stress response. Or if a guy sticks a gun in your rib cage at the ATM machine it would be good to have a stress response. But that stress response, again, is playing in all sorts of situations when our survival is really not in question, and we're bathing in this response and it's killing us. So we've had great results. Another study I should tell you about before we close is a study we undertook with prison guards in Los Angeles. This study, which we call the CPOST study, and is available, as all of our studies are, on the heartmath.org website. The CPOST study looked at prison guards and over a very short period, a couple of months, looked at how they were responding to their job and how their anxiety and anger and frustration were affected, as well as some physiologic variables. What we found was these prison guards had a totally different view of their relationship with their managers. This is a very stressful job, as you can imagine. Herding violent inmates around for a living is a very dangerous thing. And these people are prone to lots of physical illness and lots of hostility and anger. And they found that their hostility, their depression, their anger, their frustration all went down when they learned how to practice the HeartMath tools. Their perceived managerial support went down, a very big concept. And a couple of other important things happened. Their blood sugar dropped, their cholesterol dropped, and their systolic and diastolic blood pressure dropped. The government organization that runs that institution calculated, in other words, HeartMath did not calculate, but the administration of this correctional institute calculated a $700 per employee drop in healthcare expenditures per year because of these guys using the HeartMath tools and lowering their stress and having more balance and lowering their cholesterol, their blood sugar, and their blood pressure. So applications are very widespread. I have personal experience in a one-on-one sort of arena, and I need to tell you about one-on-one because a lot of you who will be listening to this or attending the program will want to learn how to use these tools with your patients. My very first patient, if you will, was actually a nurse on a medical surgical floor. Wonderful nurse, young, about 24 years old, had been out of school a couple of years, recently married, very happily married, very good relationship with her parents. She was a very good nurse. And she came to me one day and she said, "Dr. Wilson, they just found out that I have high blood pressure, and I've never had high blood pressure before. And, you know, I remember you telling me about HeartMath. Do you think HeartMath would be able to help me?" And I said, "You know, I think it would." This was before our blood pressure studies had been done. I said, "There's no reason why it wouldn't hurt you. What is your blood pressure?" And she said, "It's 160 over 100. And this alarmed me. She's a rather petite female, and in working with her, had never seen her act like she was really stressed out, although she said, "You know, sometimes I get stressed out at work." But she didn't strike me as one of those high anxiety, high tension sort of people. Well, I said, "The first thing we have to do is do a couple of tests and make sure that you don't have some unusual condition that's causing your blood pressure to be high." And we did those tests, and they were all negative. So I put her on a little bit of a beta blocker, which did bring her blood pressure under control. Then I said, "Can you come over to my office, and I'd like to teach you these HeartMath tools." Again, I think this was in the era before we had the freeze framer, so there was no way to hook her up and show her that she was, in fact, able to learn this very quickly, but everyone is able to learn this very quickly. And I gave her the HeartMath tools, and over a matter of a few weeks, I was able to cut her beta blocker in half, and after a few more weeks, I was able to taper her beta blocker off. Her blood pressure went down to about 120 over 70, maybe even a little bit lower. And while this is an isolated anecdote in my own experience, I can't say that HeartMath lowered her blood pressure. I can only observe that it took a beta blocker to get it down, and I was able to taper her off the beta blocker. Again, there were no obvious contributing factors in her social history, if you will, to lead me to believe that she was having trouble coping. But these HeartMath tools I found to be very helpful, and she was very grateful for the opportunity to have these tools to use in her everyday life. And, you know, she and her husband were interested in starting a family someday soon, and she was really quite anxious about having to be on medications while that was in progress. And so we had a very nice outcome there. Again, this I'm a scientist, I'm a physician, and a single anecdote is only an anecdote. I've had multiple anecdotes. I'll tell you a couple more. One of my close friends is an interventional radiologist, and he has a 10-year-old son who's been diagnosed with ADHD, and one of his other kids has it also, but this kid is a wonderful kid. He's very bright, but he is just bouncing off the walls. And actually, he's been through multiple psychotherapists, and the chief of psychiatry at the Children's Hospital in Wisconsin, a very well-known guy, sort of threw up his hands in frustration and told this man and his wife, "I feel so badly. I've had your son on 4 different medications, and he's currently on 3 of them, and I don't seem to be making much of a dent in this guy. I really am so sorry." I said to him, "You know, I've mentioned this HeartMath to you before, and you've been interested. I don't have the experience of working with small children, but I'd be willing to speak with your son and try to teach him these tools. They're very easy to learn. And how about if we give that a go?" And he said, "All right, that would be okay." And one Saturday morning, I took my laptop computer with the program on it, and I went over and interrupted the breakfast they were having, and everyone finished up their breakfast and cleaned up the table. And then I sat with this young man who sat on his father's lap, and his father, of course, said, "I want to learn this too," in order to support his son. So we spent about an hour teaching the HeartMath tools to this young man. He was quickly able to master the tools and produce the proper waveform on the screen. But I didn't really know. I hadn't known this young man very long, and I couldn't really tell if we'd made much of an impact. At least he had learned how to do it, and I was advising his dad about how to get him to practice. And as I was leaving the house, we were walking through the front door, and I turned to say goodbye to him and that I would see him on the golf course the next day, which is where we were headed. And I looked around, and there was a tear running down his face. And I said, "What is it?" And he said, "My son has never sat still for that long in his 10 years of life." And that was very touching for me to see that this kid could sit down and be plugged in and be managing his heart rate variability signal for the very first time, and that he was at least calm enough to sit and learn it, which they had never seen in 10 years. Well, that touched me quite a bit, and that's another anecdote. And I will tell you that over time, this kid has progressed. His father bought him a little M-Wave handheld device, and every night before he goes to bed, his father goes in to read to him, and they click on the M-Wave machine because the kid says every night when they're done reading, "I want to use the heart machine." So this has become sort of a tender story for them, and he's made great progress. As a matter of fact, he has stayed in the same school for the last 2 years, and he has bounced around in many schools before. I'm sure the school has a lot to do with this, too. And I don't claim that HeartMath did this, but, you know, HeartMath has no side effects. Another story, again, before we finish, a brief story. I have a close friend who's a psychiatrist. He's the chief of psychiatry at my hospital here in Milwaukee. He's a good friend, and he actually is a HeartMath trainer himself. He was a professor at Georgetown before he came to Milwaukee. He's the author of 3 books. So he's a smart guy, and he's a very accomplished psychiatrist. He is trained in psychoanalysis in particular and is the head of the Wisconsin Psychoanalytic Foundation. But regardless of that, he has chosen within his practice not to teach HeartMath himself because the relationship he's had with some of these patients for a long time would be disrupted a little bit, he feels, by introducing this new thing. So he sends some of his patients to me, actually. He teaches HeartMath to other people who are new to him, but he sent me a guy who's a very prominent trial attorney here. This poor guy is about 58 years old. He has 6 or 7 children, about half of whom have yet to go to college, so he needs to keep working. He got an anxiety attack in the middle of a trial last year and he hasn't been the same since. The psychiatrist has been using multiple medications and psychotherapy with him. This guy is scared to go back in the courtroom, and he needs to get back on the horse. And the psychiatrist said, I want you to see Dr. Wilson, one of my cardiology friends. He's got a set of tools relating to how the heart speaks to the brain that I think you will find quite useful. I spent two sessions with this man, and my one-on-one sessions are basically broken into two parts where I teach him a little bit about the science and then teach him a couple of these tools. In two sessions, this guy was able to stop taking his medications and get back to work, and he's now trying cases again. Worked like a charm. Again, it's an anecdote, but we all sort of love the idea that perhaps we can make a strong impact on people without giving them some medication that may in fact give them side effects. This guy was tremendously grateful for the tools we gave him. Another quick story that just popped into my mind right now is a minister at a local church came to see me, and this guy told me he got very anxious before he got into the pulpit every time. And I've heard this guy preach. It's interesting, this guy was a theater major when he was in college, and he gets up in the pulpit and he sings and he tells jokes and he's very boisterous. He's very atypical in terms of a minister. But I said to him, this is hard for me to believe. You have a lot of anxiety before you get in the pulpit. You get up there and act like you're a one-man show. And he said, yep, and when I'm sitting in the pew before I get into that pulpit, I'm shaking like a leaf every time. So this is a perfect example of how to teach somebody this. I taught him the tools in one session. He's been very grateful to me ever since. He tells me that it's been very helpful. I even taught these tools to a woman flying next to me. We were on an airplane together, and we were taking off, and I had just given a heart math seminar somewhere across the country, so my laptop was in the overhead space with my freeze framer equipment in it, and we went to take off, and this woman who I've never seen before in my life, she's about 35 years old, reaches over, clamps onto my forearm, digs her nails into my arm, shaking like a leaf, pale, sweaty, completely sympathetic. We take off, and when we level off, she slowly lets go of my hand. She looks into my eyes and says, oh, sir, I am so sorry. I'm so embarrassed. I just hate flying, and when the takeoff and the landing are the worst, and my husband just hates flying with me because I dig into his arm all the time. And I said, you know, it's okay. I have a callus on my arm because my wife has the same thing you have. And that arm is just about numb, so I'm happy to be of service. And she said, oh, my God, I'm so sorry, and I'm so embarrassed. I said, you know, would you have any interest in getting over that problem? And she said, well, of course. And I said, you know, let me just tell you a couple of sentences about what I do for a living on top of practicing cardiology. And I brought my laptop top down. We put it on the little tray in front of the seat, and I hooked her up to it, and she was able immediately to throw her switch and change her heart rate variability pattern. And she was very grateful, and of course I never saw her again, so I have no idea if she was able to use those tools. But you start to get an idea of the wide applicability of these tools and how wonderful it is for people to start realizing they have control over their response. They've always viewed stress as the thing in the environment, the airplane travel, the budget meeting, the HIPAA regulations, the J-Code visit, the staffing issues with too many patients, the teenage daughter, the budget, you name it. Everyone views those things as stress, but in fact stress is really our physiologic, emotional, mental response. It's a biologic response to those stimuli. And if you can actually elect to alter that response, once you learn how to use these tools, you turn the whole thing around. It's been my pleasure to give you a very brief thumbnail sketch of what the HeartMath tools are all about, how they were developed, some of the research around using HeartMath tools in various situations, certain illnesses. We have experience with kids with ADD. I told you my experience with this one kid, but we have a psychotherapist in Central America who's actually gotten about 400 children off of their ADD drugs. So the applicability seems endless. We've worked with PGA professionals. We've worked with PGA and LPGA golf instructors. We've worked with the U.S. Olympic ski jumping team. We've worked with all four branches of the military. We've worked in Fortune 100 and 500 companies all over the globe. So I hope to interest you enough that you'd like to attend the program, and I'd make myself available to you if you have any questions at any time. Thanks very much.
For more information about HarkMath's products and services for hospitals and health professionals, go to www.harkmath.com. That's www.heartmath.com. Or call Dr. Robert Massey for hospital programs at 831-338-8723. Or Carol Thompson for health professionals at 831-338-8781. For information on HarkMath's research, go to www.harkmath.org. Thank you.